Hello and welcome back to the Why Comics Podcast, the comic book show where we talk about comics we love and sometimes we talk to the people who create them. I'm your host, Hannah, and with me is your other host, Jesse.
Hello.
Today, we're going to be talking about The Girl from the Sea by Molly Knox Ostertag. Hi, Jesse.
I cut in a little too fast there with my hello. Tea's making me peppy.
How are you today?
I'm okay. It is nearing the end of the week, and I am ready to sleep.
Same. I spent most of my day yesterday sleeping. It just, like, grabbed me.
I like the image of your bed just, like, growing hands and just grabbing and pulling you back.
A lot of it was on my couch, actually. But, I mean, same thing.
Couch hands. I thought there was a lot that I wanted to talk about other than the comic that we read this week. And then I went to go put topics. I'm like, I don't remember anything I thought about this week. Because there was a few things I'm like, oh, this would be fun to talk about. And I'm like, nothing. Nothing came to my mind.
Yeah, there was a few things I was like, oh, like, kind of want to talk about it. But, like, there's nothing to really talk about it. Like, I like that Jurassic League thing that got announced today.
Yeah, no, that's cool.
That's kind of about it, you know? Like, that we don't know anything else about it. I'm also, like, real sick of these dumbass characters from Marvel. They announced the new Savage Avengers lineup today while we were recording this, for anyone who isn't clear on that. And it looks like it consists of... Let me pull this up real quick.
There's one character that isn't on the images I sent you.
Okay.
The one...
Does it make it better or worse?
I don't know. I don't know how you feel about this character. It's is it Deathlok? Is that his name?
Okay. Sure.
Because he's on the main cover.
He's kind of in the same... He's in the same category to me with the two dumbass characters in this. So we'll start with the good characters. We've got Conan, which, like, just makes sense for Savage Avengers. Mm-hmm. Cloak and Dagger showing up, which I'm always happy to see Cloak and Dagger show up. Then we've got the Black Knight, and we've got Elektra's Daredevil.
Mm-hmm.
And then, for some fucking reason, we have Weapon H and Anti-Venom.
My hope for these characters, because I'll probably at least pick up the first issue of this to see, like, how it's written. My hope is that they're, like, the bulk and skull of the group.
I mean, yeah, I was kind of hoping that, like, some Suicide Squad Tom Taylor stuff would happen, where, like, two characters just get killed off and it happens to be them.
Yeah.
But then I realized how hard it would be to do, like, in canon with those two characters, even though I think those two characters are fucking stupid.
I don't even know who's anti-Venom anymore.
I don't know. I don't really care. I'll look it up.
Because wasn't that Eddie Brock? And he just had, like, a different Venom suit at some point?
Yeah, Eddie Brock and Flash Thompson.
That's weird. And Flash is alive, but he would still be Agent Venom. He wouldn't be Anti-Venom. He'd be Agent Anti-Venom, but it's weird that he would be just Anti-Venom.
During the Venom Inc. arc, Dr. Steven used elements of the Anti-Venom symbiote to create a new cure for the Venom symbiote's toxic shock syndrome. Okay, so was there an arc where Venom left its tampon in for too long? how the fuck did... Whatever. That could adapt alongside it. When high concentrations of this serum were exposed to the Venom symbiote's biomass bonded to Flash Thompson, the Anti-Venom symbiote was recreated.
Weird.
Yeah.
Oh. Looks like it's still Agent Venom, maybe based off some promo art that the artist has been, like, teasing. I'm kind of just digging on Twitter while we're talking about this. I could show you what they're talking about, though, because, I mean, to me, this really looks like Agent Venom.
This is a riveting audio podcast where we talk about pictures that the audience cannot see.
I mean, it looks like Agent Venom to me.
Yeah, so I guess it would probably just still be Flash.
It would make sense. Flash is around again. He came back at the end of King in Black.
Yeah, that's true. And then, I mean, whatever. Maybe they'll do something cool with it, and maybe I'm just being a shithead, but, like, this is my, like, modern comics are ruining characters moment.
Fair.
where, like, normally it would be some big bald white dude yelling about how they made Miss Marvel brown or something, which is one of my favorite things. But it's like, why the fuck do we have so many fucking... What purpose does anti-Venom serve that Venom does not already currently serve?
I'd
love to know.
I don't think it serves any purpose. I think the answer, and this is what sucks with team books a lot of times, but it is the reason we got something like the DeMathis and... gosh, who was the other writer on that? But McGuire... Justice League comic is because they asked, like, hey, who can we use? And they're like, nobody, you have to pick these characters. And, like, I'm just assuming that's what happened, is he's like, hey, I want to use Venom. And they're like, yeah, but Ron V and Al Ewing have Venom right now, and they're doing something weird with his son, so you gotta use anti-Venom.
I mean, yeah, I'm sure that's what happened.
I mean, I'm assuming that's the same reason why Weapon H is in there, is because Wolverine's busy doing Wolverine stuff, and Wolverine can't be a part of the book anymore.
What was that? Was it Exiles? With, like, the alternate universe Kamala Khan, where she's, like, Cable?
I have no idea. Your Marvel knowledge is more than my Marvel knowledge.
Alright. We'll get to my little gay fish story in a second.
Yeah, I can't wait. I did want to... Oh, wait, let me look at this. Now this is a really image thing. Like, you posted something that I have to look at. Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, I remember seeing this. Ooh. Okay, I didn't know anything about this. I should read this book. This book looks cool.
Yeah. Saladin Ahmed, Javier Rodriguez, Exiles 2018. For people who aren't clear. If I remember right, it's specifically MCU's Valkyrie.
Yeah, okay.
Because it's all different. It's all different, like, multiversal versions of characters.
I can get behind
this.
And
so it's like... specifically the MCU's Valkyrie. A alternate version of Kang the Conqueror where he, like,
yeah, well,
stayed
that,
Iron Lad.
That's the thing. The original Young Avengers Iron Lad.
Yeah, but it's like him as an adult now.
Oh, is he an adult now? Okay.
If I remember, I haven't read it in a while. And then Kamala Khan, who is fully, like, Cable.
Okay.
Kind of. Like, she's not... she has some cybernetics. I can't remember, really. It's been a while. And then Scotty Young Wolverine. Like, from a universe where everyone is drawn by Scotty Young.
It's very funny.
Peggy Carter, Captain America, was in this as well. But she wasn't Captain Britain, like, in the What If. She was actually Captain America.
Oh, Rodriguez eventually started drawing the book. Okay, so that's some good artist on it.
Yeah, Rodriguez drew it for a little while, and then Rod Rice drew on it for a couple issues. And then I think, Joe Quinones did one.
Joe Quinones is great with mixing comic styles. I mean, Dial H for Heroes may be one of the best-looking comics ever made.
Yeah, and he's great at just, like, mimicking other styles and, like, making them his own at the same time. It's a great read. Maybe we'll get around to it eventually.
I'm about to say, I don't want to, as I already mispronounced one of the artist's names, I don't want to mispronounce the writer's name again. But we should read his Black Bolt book, because I really love that one.
Yes, yeah, that one was really good.
That's
anyway.
Is that by Christian? Did Christian Ward do the art for that? I think so.
I should remember this, but I don't.
I could have sworn it was very Christian Ward art.
Black Bolt.
What could that up to?
Yeah, Christian Ward.
Cool. I know you at least did the covers.
Yeah. It felt very...
a heavy book.
Greg Smallwood to me in my memory.
Yeah, yeah, very much. Like, I think at the time the Smallwood Moon Knight was happening, so that maybe is why.
Yeah, which is, like, my favorite Moon Knight of all time.
The other thing I put on here is something about the X-Men that was brought up on another podcast I was listening to about how this new age, the Krakoa age, the Dawn of X age, the X-Men don't really do hero things. They do mostly just X-Men things, which is cool. I've been really liking reading it. But I was thinking about that. It's like, for the longest time, until this new Gary Duggan X-Men book, it's been mostly like, we got to deal with our own stuff on the island.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what comes with building a nation, is helping everyone else kind of takes a back burner. But I think that's kind of why we're in this new X-Men series. Like, the mainline X-Men series is kind of just them doing hero shit. Because even if maybe we as an audience didn't necessarily miss it that much, like, I'm sure the writers miss doing it. Like, that's what a lot of people get into writing comics for, is to, like, write heroes doing hero shit, you know?
Yeah, I wonder, too, it's like, we've been so used to the X-Men being so insular in the last 2 years. I'm curious what this new wave of X-Men is going to look like, and if they're going to be crossing over with actual books. I mean, it is X-Men versus Avengers versus Eternals. That's what it is. I mean, so with that, I bet we're going to see a lot of that too.
Yeah, and I imagine most of that's going to be like the main X-Men team, especially with like Hellfire Gala happening right around there with the new addition with the vote and everything like that being announced. Like, I'm sure it's going to be mostly the main X-Men team that's in that event, but yeah. I'd love to see, like, I'm sure they're going to involve the Mars stuff in it, because that's a big focus right now, and all of that other stuff too. So I'm excited to see where it was. I was a little bit more sour on it, but now that some of the art has come out and I've seen kind of what it looks like, like, I'm more into it now, especially the team having been confirmed and stuff.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see what this the main plot is and where the status quo kind of ends up.
Well, I'm sure we'll read about it in Immortal X-Men and the Eternals book, like, leading up to it too, considering Kieran Gillen's writing both of those too.
Have you read any of the Eternals book by him?
I read the first like 3 or 4 issues. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just at that point I was like, oh, I'll relegate this one to my trades.
Part of me wishes that book was just prose.
Yeah, like just like
prose with like full page illustrations.
Yeah, that would just Hugo. Like,
mm-hmm.
But X-Men. Well, I guess not X-Men, but yeah, you know what I mean.
I know what you mean. So that's all I had topic-wise. So we can get into the lesbian fish story.
Yes.
Hannah has so graciously brought to the table.
Yeah, as with everything, I wanted to further the gay agenda on everything that I do. So I decided to make Jesse read a story about a sweet little lesbian who doesn't want to come out of the closet and is helped by a young Selkie girl, which is kind of like a mermaid, except she turns into a seal instead of having a fishtail.
Which, to be honest, I think is cuter. Like the idea...
It's way cooler. Yeah. It's way cooler than the mermaid shit, if we're being fully honest.
And the idea is, like, if I go back in the water with my seal skin on, like, 7 years, you have to wait for me.
Yeah, and it's kind of, it's very Davy Jones curse, like in the Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
Yeah.
Like, when Will Turner finally takes over the boat, he can only step on land once every 7 years.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, like, it makes it a little bit more meaningful when they do get to see each other, I guess. And then... spoilers for the end, but whatever. With the end where you kind of see that there's that old Selkie who kind of chose to stay on land. At least that we know that that's an option in the future if maybe another book were to come out. You know, but I do kind of love how the ending got wrapped up with a little bow.
Mm-hmm. Same. I have questions though about that, because that's her grandfather, right? Like, is she a quarter Selkie?
That's her neighbor specifically.
Oh, I thought they mentioned that was her grandparent.
No, it was a little weird. I had to go back and read it, but they do say that's the neighbors, because when her brother outs her and she complains to Kelty, She says, now my mom and the neighbors know too. And then when she came back home, her mom said, your grandparents might take some time to understand.
That's right.
I've been an ally. So yeah, it was a little weird, like pacing wise, I think, in that specific like 2-page little thing. But yeah, those are just people who live on the island.
Yeah, that makes sense. It would make sense too, because I'm like, yeah, they look nothing like each other.
Yeah, like it's like a Korean family, and then the grandparents are like two old white people.
Yeah. So yeah, thank you for clearing that up, because I was like, that's a little weird. I also like that there's like a slight environmental story as the B plot of it all.
Yeah, every good lesbian story has an environmental B plot. I mean, at least they should.
Especially if the lesbian story is about the sea.
Yeah, and then it's very like a special episode of a certain cartoon or something like that, where it's like, oh, there's this plot happening. Oh, but also we should care about the environment. But it felt a lot more natural than that at the same time. It was like the best version of a very special episode.
Yeah, I think you're saying it's a very like it's a better version of very special episodes, right on the money, because there is the one issue where like everything kind of falls into place really perfectly, where there's no one challenging her in a sense when it comes to, like, coming out, which I think is why this is like more a young adult or kid comic, where if it was more adult comic, there would be like that strife and that like someone wouldn't agree with it and be really, really mad about it all, where everybody was like, I just wish you told us.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's mostly like the author and artist and creator, Molly Knox Ostertag, just kind of like, she's obviously gearing this towards children, or like at least like teenagers or young adults that like maybe haven't come out of the closet themselves yet, or like are struggling with having just come out of the closet. And it's something that when like we were younger, obviously I'm not sure how old Molly is, but obviously I think her and I are closer in age than to like a 17-year-old now or something. Like it's nice to see stuff like that when maybe we didn't get to as a kid that often.
Yeah.
Like a lot of the books that we read when we were kids were like, especially in school, like it was very much just like either the classics or like modern, like contemporary literature, like The Lord of the Rings or The Catcher in the Rye or something like that. Like we never got to read like gay shit in school. And now there's a whole thing in like every school board because the Republicans are the worst people in the world and they're trying to make sure that no gay kids can read stuff like this in school or in public libraries or anything like that. And it's fucked up because, like, this is important. Like, it's important for kids to, even if, like, it's not necessarily true, like, it's important for kids to see that there are people like that, even if it is fictional. Like, mm-hmm. someone real wrote this, and someone real wanted you or someone like you to see that.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important, and that's why I wanted to kind of talk about it today.
Yeah, and I think there's a good argument to be made, and it's an argument I think that's being made a lot more lately, where it's like, not every queer character needs to be so messy, because there's an idea that a lot of fictional queer characters are just a mess.
Yeah, like there's the trope of the disaster gay now.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where it's like, maybe things can just be happy. I think there's a great line by the mom. Let me see if I can find it. But there's a great line from the mom about that in particular. I think it's right after everything came out. She says, sometimes you have to let life get messy, and that's when you get to the good parts.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really nice thing. And like, her life does get messy and it does get complicated, but once she lets it kind of happen, it's like, you know what, I'm done hiding this stuff. Everybody's like, okay, cool. Now that we know, we can deal with the issue.
Yeah. And we can work together on it, too.
Yeah.
And, like, as someone whose parents didn't do that for her when she came out, like, when I came out, like, it was nice to see, even, like, as a wish fulfillment thing, like, especially like, I mean, it's not like confirmed anywhere in the story, but their last name is Kwan, and the only people I've ever known with the last name Kwan have been Korean, so I'm projecting Koreanness onto these characters.
Mm-hmm.
It is just nice to see, like, especially like a Korean mom just be like understanding about it and be cool about it, because that was very much not my experience. And yeah, like, it was written by a white lady, but still, it's nice.
I think my two favorite moments are kind of like tied together, where gosh, look at me doing the thing I do best and forgetting people's names. Kelty, is it Kelty? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah.
Yeah, Kelty.
I mean, I assume so. I've only ever read it.
That's fair. Where Kelty sees the shirt and she really wants it, and so she buys it, and then it's revealed the shirt is just like a Lisa Frank dolphin shirt, basically. But then,
yeah,
yeah, but then Morgan like makes it into a dress, and it's like a really pretty dress.
It's like a really pretty dress that's built around like a touristy
mm-hmm.
Lisa Frank dolphin shirt, and it's the most of the cuteness besides like the actual nice parts of the dress is just like the sentiment of it, since Kelty just like imprinted on that shirt for some reason.
Yeah, it's really, really cute stuff keeps happening in the book. And I was reading last night, but it was late and I was like, I need to go to bed, but also I would really like to finish reading this.
Yeah, it's just so cute. And like every time I read it, I can read it in like less than an hour, because it's so easy to just keep turning the pages and just like read what's going on. And there's like so many little layers to it. Like in this reread for the recording, like I noticed something that I didn't really notice before, and I think her friend Serena is gay, and that's why she's so mad about Morgan being gay.
Yeah,
is like it's, if you look and you read through, like there's that whole group chat where like obviously they're all like best friends and stuff, but the only one that texts Morgan outside of the group chat to check on her is Serena, mm-hmm. is the rich girl. And when she finally comes out and says like, oh, I have a girlfriend, and it's Kelty, like the rest of her friends are all super jazzed, and she's just like kind of rude about it. And at first I was like, oh, is she like homophobic or something? And then I realized that maybe she was just being cold because she felt like my first time reading it, like I thought maybe she was just being cold because she wanted to know, like she felt like she didn't think that Morgan was her friend anymore or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the more I read it, I'm like, I think Serena has a fucking crush on Morgan. And I think that's why she's so upset about it. Because even at the end, when Kelty has to go back into the ocean because she had to put the sealskin back on to save Serena, like Serena's the only one that turns around to check on Morgan. And it's kind of sweet. Like, if you read it as her having a crush on her, as opposed to just her being, like, a jealous friend.
And I also like, too, that no one kind of suspected Morgan. Her mom did, but, like, that's because parents are kind of intuitive about that stuff, usually, even if they don't like it.
Yeah.
But even, like, her closest friends, no one just picked up on it. It just kind of shows, like, again, like, these stereotypes that we've built in for token characters have really burned into us, as like the queer characters always have to act more flamboyant or have to act more tomboy. It's like, no, they're just people. And this is what the story is about. It's just about people being people and being messy and being, but also like being really touching and being loving and really being passionate for each other.
It's just a nice, cute story.
Yeah.
And it's really sweet, and like, yeah, it's for kids, but some of the best stuff is for kids.
Yeah.
Like even like, and like, this is Molly's partner who made this, or like was the showrunner for it, but like She-Ra is one of my favorite shows on Netflix, and that was primarily made, like, it's targeted to kids, like, but it just happens to be a fucking fantastic show, just like how this happens to be a fucking fantastic book, even though it's maybe primarily targeted towards like maybe at the youngest like 13-year-olds.
Yeah, honestly, I don't. I mean, it's in the Scholastic graphics section, which is like for kids.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine it's targeted at the same audience that like the Beast Boy and Raven novels and like stuff like that are coming out, like the Starfire's Daughter
Yeah, the I Am
graphic
Starfire
novel and
one, yeah.
stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I still need to read that too. Like, I like the look of it, and I just never got around to buying it.
All of those DC Ink books are so good. I'm
Yeah.
really excited for Marvel to start creating more of theirs with that Scholastic imprint too.
They this is a little off topic, but I read the Grayson one, the circ I can't remember what it's called. It's something circus. It's like the Golden Circus or something. Yeah.
Yeah, I know the one you're talking about though. I don't remember the title, but I know what you're talking about.
This is all very good. I enjoy every Harley Breaking Glass, very good.
And then it's just like those, they don't feel as burdened down by like canon and continuity and blah blah blah. Like it's just like you get to see them exist for a little while, and it's nice.
And it's really like they get kids back into the door of a place that's so unkid friendly.
Yeah, and honestly, like I don't think I've vocalized this on a podcast before, only privately, but like comics should be for kids.
Yeah.
Like the idea that comics like and like comics shouldn't just be for 40-year-old white dudes, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I think that's a pretty easy opinion to have. But like even some of the comics that aren't made for 40-year-old white dudes, like they're still not made for kids. Like Lady Killer is one of my favorite like I guess graphic novels, independent series of all time. Like, it's one of the only books that I've felt the need to buy the library edition for. And that's clearly not targeted towards men at all,
Yeah.
but it's weird to me that like we've just accepted comics as no, that's for adults now. 'Cause like that's not what like even like back in the day, like they were originally made for kids. And they just happened to entertain adults as well.
Yeah.
A lot like how I was talking about how I love She-Ra and stuff like that. It's the same kind of stuff where it was, yeah, it's made for kids, but it's just made intelligently and it's made in a way that can appeal to everyone, even if it's not just kids watching it or just kids reading it.
Yeah, I agree with you.
And like Spider-Man having to deal with like the death of a friend or the death of a loved one, like every other arc is like heavy for a fucking kid to deal with. Like sometimes a kid just wants to see Spider-Man fight the Green Goblin and win, you know? And that doesn't happen anymore. It's like everything has to be so dark and serious and real life. And it's like these are fucking people who dress up in spandex and swing off of buildings. Like they can be a little fun sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I think about when the characters started, like Spider-Man, starting with the death of like Uncle Ben and stuff, and kids were reading that. But it was made in such a way that I don't think kids picked up on any of it, or but
Well, it
they
also like
yeah.
you didn't see like you saw him die maybe in a couple different continuities. Like you maybe saw his dead body in a panel,
Yeah.
or like you saw him get shot or something. But it's not like you saw him like get skinned alive and strung up by his balls and like some shit you'd find in a Batman comic these days. When in like the 60s, Batman was a kid's character. Like it was a kid's show with like the Adam West show and shit, you know? Like it just happened to entertain adults. And maybe some of that is 'cause back in the day like wasn't much entertaining shit going on, but at the same time it's just weird that like every time there's a Batman movie, people are disappointed that it's going to be PG-13.
Yeah.
Like I want a hard R Batman, I want a hard R Batman, and it's like why? Like he's a dude who dresses up like a bat who fights a clown. It doesn't need to be rated R if it doesn't like it being rated R needs to justify itself at a certain point, and then because of that, they tend to go overboard in it,
Yeah.
you know?
I mean, even like the sense of a character like Deadpool, like if you read Deadpool comics, Deadpool is not a hard R character. He's just an
Yeah.
idiot.
He's like, I mean, he's literally a cartoon character, and yeah, it gets pretty bloody, but like,
but
those aren't books that, like, those books are still targeted towards like teenage boys. Like, yeah, they're not targeted towards people who can go watch R-rated movies in the theater.
Yeah. It is kind of interesting, like, why the R rating gets pushed in some comic things, and it's mostly because adults are like, I need something for me. We're like, you have plenty for you.
And also, like, why can't it be for an adult, even if it is PG-13?
Yeah, I mean...
Like, just because they don't say fuck 37 times, and you don't get to see someone get shot in the asshole, like, why do you need to see that?
It's one of those things where, like, there's a sense of writing for both audiences has kind of gone out the window in some areas. And it happened early, somewhere in the early 2000s, because watching all these cartoons I've been watching with Batman to Justice League now, and, like, the tonal difference between the original couple seasons of Batman the Animated Series to where Justice League is now, I'm like, oh, man, they're just writing to be for adults, even like though kids are watching this, where the original Batman's like, it's for both. It's easily for both.
Yeah. And, but like by the end of, especially like Justice League Unlimited, it's getting into like heavier plots about, yeah, like that are more steeped in like comic history than necessarily like making sense for the plot of the show. Like, mm-hmm, they're kind of just like working in like references to comics in the show to make the adults who watched or to read the comics go like, oh, that's my Glup Shitto from Star Wars. And like, it's weird.
There is no reason that you have to allude that Batman has slept with Wonder Woman, Batgirl, Lois Lane. Like, you, like, yeah, all these characters, like, but like, he, but they purposely, they imply that
he fucked like every woman in that show somehow.
Yeah.
Like, at some point,
there's literally an episode where Talia comes back in Batman Beyond, and Bruce is looking through all these pictures of every single woman that have been introduced in the DCU at that point. And he's like, I've been with them all.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's just Bruce Timm being Bruce Timm, though.
Yeah, I mean, he's...
I don't know how much work he did on the Justice League show, but...
He was basically the only one from the original animated crew to go do Justice League, so...
Okay, yeah. But like, I mean, I love man's art. I have one of the man's horny books on my shelf, but like, that man was horny for some DC characters, and yeah, he very much projected onto Bruce Wayne throughout that entire series.
Which
even to the point where, like, in The Killing Joke, he had him and Barbara fuck on that clock tower, which was just so fucking weird.
Which I think is like, you can have that in a sense, but it has to like make sense. Like the whole idea that Terry is a clone of Bruce, I've been watching all the commentaries, well, because they have the Blu-rays and all that stuff like that, and everybody's like, we all hated that idea except for Bruce, and since that happened during Justice League, Bruce Timm was the only one from that original crew there going like, oh well, we have an extra episode, I can do this now.
Stupid.
Yeah,
but I mean, yeah, like I guess that's kind of what you do as a comic artist, right? Or as a comic writer too, is like, maybe you like a character, but the guy who's writing that character does some fuck shit with it, so maybe you can't do the stuff that you wanted to do with that character.
Yeah,
much like how, and I'm gonna complain about Dan Slott again, much like how Dan Slott ruined Franklin Richards just because the X office wanted to play with Franklin Richards a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, they wanted to play with the idea of someone maybe being, like, a dual citizen of, like, mm-hmm, Krakoa and the normal human Earth. And then Dan Slott was like, no, I'm taking my ball and I'm leaving with it. Fuck you. And took away Franklin's X gene and, like, basically said that Franklin never had an X gene and that he willed it into himself, which, like, there's some implied transphobia there, but we can dig into that a little bit later. It's just like, it's a weird thing to do, like, especially with like these living stories like this at this point, where it's like there's 37 people writing and contributing to this overarching story,
yeah,
that is technically weaving through all of these books at the same time. Which is why, like, yeah, Anti-Venom has to be in Savage Avengers because they're doing stuff with Venom in the other book and blah, blah, blah. But it's just so weird sometimes, I mean, the way that they... Yeah.
It was just like something I've been thinking about a lot because of just what I've been reading is like, why are we still in a place where Batman trusts nobody? He has all these
Right?
kids that he's raised since they were
He has a
kids.
family.
Yeah, he's made the family he always wanted. He has two of the best friends he's ever could have asked within Clark and Diana, and yet we still have writers writing like he can't trust any of these people.
That's why the best Batman is the Wayne Family Adventures Batman, and I'll stand by that.
Yeah, it's just kind of silly, like reading Tim Seeley's Robin's book, which I think is fine overall, but there's the scene in the last issue where Dick basically goes, I think this whole Robin's program was a mistake because you just still don't trust us. I'm like, yeah, why? Why don't you trust him, Bruce? It's just
Yeah, like, I mean, at this point in
frustrating.
the canon, he's been Robin and Nightwing for a while, like Dick specifically, like, or even Tim, like, having been Robin for a while, you know? And it's like, he doesn't trust any of them. Like, even in the Nightwing book, like, Dick has brought it up. Like, Bruce doesn't trust him to, like, be a good Nightwing. And how? Literally, how?
Yeah, it's frustrating. We got a little off topic, but going back to the girl from the sea, it's just this is what kids' comics should be. It should be pure and be honest and just be full of love in a way.
Yeah, and it's like not even just like the story doesn't have to be full of love, but like there was a lot of love poured into creating this book, and you can tell with like the way that the panels are laid out and the way that the art is drawn and the emotion that you can just like feel while you're reading it is very palpable. And it's nice to see stuff like this. It's earnest and it's honest and it's just really sweet. And it's nice to see like that kids can grow up these days seeing stuff like this, and maybe it'll help them realize like they can be who they want to be and not be who they've been told they have to be like their whole lives. And I think that's beautiful.
I want to thank you for bringing this to me because I would never would have read it unless you brought it to the show.
Yeah, that's my job. Make people read gay book.
Yeah, I think you're doing a great job at that, at least so far. One for one.
I will bring more gay book. I have a few. Do web comics count for this? I can make them count. I am the host.
Yeah, you're you
I'm the
have you
host
have you have the
today.
power. I know for our scheduling for the next few episodes, we have a guest, Riley Hopkins, coming on next week. And the week after that, we're doing another read along with our friend Chris, aka Wheels. And I can't remember which Moon Knight we're reading, but we're reading a Moon Knight book. I'm looking it up as I am type as I'm talking. Hopefully I can
Fate's
talk.
Vengeance? Vengeance of the Moon Knight?
Yeah, Vengeance of Moon Knight. We're reading the first arc of that, which I think is only six issues.
Yeah. That sounds good.
I just thought of this before we wrap up and you do all the wrap up stuff. Ron V just teased that there's an authority character coming to Swamp Thing. And I'm like, yes, let Ron V rewrite all of Warren Ellis's characters, please.
Please, God.
Like if we can redo something of Warren Ellis's legacy, just let non-white people rewrite everything he
Yeah,
did.
just give everything that Warren Ellis ever touched at DC to non-white creators and just see what happens with it. Maybe people will forget Warren Ellis ever existed, like we all should. Anyway, with that very weird and breaking off into several tangents wrap up, I want to thank our patron producers, Anthony Greco and Patrick Molman. If you want to support us on Patreon, you can find us there at patreon.com/ycomics. We have three tiers you can choose from. You can also email us at ycomicspodcast@gmail.com with any questions or suggestions for the show. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, have any questions for future guests, or have stories about how comics impacted you, you can reach out to us on that email or on Twitter at ycomicspod. If you like the show, go ahead and tell a friend and leave us a review on whatever platform you choose to listen to us on. Our logo is done by Zach Russell. You can find their work everywhere at Cavity Crew. They're wonderful, and you should give them a follow wherever you can. And our theme is Joy in the Restaurant by David Suceste. I hope you have a good day, and I'm sure Jesse does too. Good night.